You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and join us. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. A week or so ago, I had a call asking about why we would use Inspiration and the fact that their accountant put them into a C corporation and said it was better. And, you know, anytime it comes to taxes, I don't ever want to sound like I know all the answers. I've been doing taxes for owner-operators for a very, very long time, 25 years now. And I read a lot, but the IRS tax code is very complicated, and there are lots of different ways to interpret it. And many times, just because somebody is doing something doesn't mean that it's right or legal or follows the regulations or any of that. I mean, I've seen accountants do stuff that I think is just absolutely regulations, and yet they do it for hundreds of clients for years. And sometimes nothing ever happens. Other times they get caught and it is against the regulations and it gets really ugly. I'm sure there are accountants and tax preparers who have returned tax or reviewed tax returns I've done and maybe thought the same thing. So I'm always open to seeing what somebody else is doing. But I couldn't think of any reason why to put an owner-operator in a C corporation. And I've talked to a lot of other tax preparers, a lot of other accountants, and I couldn't find, you know, over the years I've asked the question, and nobody's ever really said that they use C corporations for small companies. In fact, the opposite. Everybody tries to avoid it. So I asked the caller, you know, why don't you go back to your tax preparer, ask them why, call me, we can talk about it. Well, I've been doing more research, and clearly the S corp is used quite a bit in small, profitable, in fact, I want to use the word very profitable companies, in order to reduce the overall tax burden. And in fact, so much so that the IRS kind of keeps an eye out for it. The IRS watches that that rule is not being abused. So while I was doing some research, I came across an article saying that because of the economic meltdown, you know, 2007, 2008, the government's out of money, we've got $18 trillion in debt, that the IRS is out looking to generate more revenue. And one of the places that they're looking is in the use of an S-Corp to try to minimize the employment taxes. And I thought, I better go read this, because this is what we're doing. Well, I've always been pretty confident that we are not even what I would call aggressive on this. I think we are well within the guidelines of how an S-Corp should and can be used without the IRS arguing how we use an S-Corp to lower taxes when an owner-operator is profitable. And just to give you kind of a rough idea, if you understand your tax return enough to look at it, what we're looking at is the bottom line on the Schedule C. So that is after all the expenses, things like per diem, depreciation, all of those things. And that bottom line on a Schedule C is what we're going to pay self-employment tax on. If that number, exceed 65,000 or so, 60,000, 65, somewhere around there, then it makes sense to look at an S corporation to lower that self-employment tax. And the way that we do it is, instead, if we put that the business into an S corp, instead of paying all of the employment taxes on the 65,000, we could draw a salary for the owner and driver, and we could make it what I consider to be a very reasonable salary, which is what the IRS says you should do, of, let's say, $40,000 for that year for driving the truck. And then the additional $25,000 is considered profit, and you would only pay income tax on the money, not all of the self-employment and employment tax. The savings comes in. The reason we want to get to, say, $60,000 or $65,000 is because, yes, we have a tax savings, but we also increase our expenses. Our accounting will get more expensive. Our tax return will get more expensive. We're going to pay somebody to do payroll, or we're going to have to take the time to learn it, do it. So we want to make sure there's enough savings there that it makes sense. And those are rough numbers, but they work pretty good. So now we've taken, you know, owner-operators who are really profitable. Let's say they're making $100,000 net, $120,000 net. Even, let's go to the extreme, and I'm talking a single driver now, not a team yet. The numbers for the teams would just be double of what I'm talking about here, because we would have two employees we could pay. Say we have a single owner-operator who drives the truck, one truck, and makes, after all the expenses, $150,000. Now, we might bump their salary up to, say, $50,000 or $60,000. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, we push it at $45,000. But let's say we take $50,000. Now we have $100,000 worth of profit that we would save, roughly almost 16%. So we'd have a $16,000 tax savings. Those are big numbers. Imagine $16,000 in your pocket instead of the government because you formed this S corp. Now, again, that's kind of an extreme. We don't see a lot of owner-operators make $150,000, but I certainly had a couple dozen last year. I mean, last year was such a good year. So I thought, you know, are we pushing it? Are we, you know, a target for what the IRS is looking for? And I didn't think we were, but I read the article, and the example that they give in the article was so extreme, I thought, oh my God, we are clearly within the guidelines based on what this article is saying. The article gave the exoneration that had $600,000 in profit, $600,000, and they said you could take zero salary, pass all the $600,000 through, or you could take a reasonable salary of $125,000 and pass $475,000 through. And they clearly said taking zero salary would make you a target for the IRS and could result in 20% penalties. And they listed all the other penalties. You wouldn't want to do that. But I thought, my God, who are doing that? I mean, any reasonable, responsible tax preparer, like I say, I can't even imagine trying to take zero salary when there's $600,000 in profit. But look at the numbers on what they are saying is okay. It's okay to take $125,000 salary and pass $475,000 through the S corp. They thought that was okay, that the IRS wouldn't mess with that. So compare that to the numbers we're doing, no worries whatsoever. So we're going to continue with our advice of $65,000 in net profit. The S corp makes a lot of sense. Take $40,000 or $45,000 in a salary for driving the truck, pass the rest of the money through as profit, and the more you make, the more money you save on the S-Corp. $60,000 is kind of the bottom line for me. I mean, if we start running the numbers, let's say we take $40,000 as a salary, and we only had $60,000 total profit, that means there's only $20,000 left. We're going to save about $3,500, but we might end up with as much as $1,500 or $2,000 in additional costs. So we're only looking at a tax savings at that number of about $1,000 or $1,500 a year. Nothing to sneeze at, but I wouldn't want to go any lower than that. If you're lower than that, in my opinion, not worth forming the S-Corp. If you have any questions about that, we'll get to those right after this break. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Now we are opening it up to everybody. Now that we're kind of through the 2015 tax season, doing the 2014 returns, system is in place. We had a really good tax season, a lot of great feedback from the limited number of people we did open it up to. Now we're ready to go ahead and open it up. So if you want somebody to do your tax return that understands the trucking industry, we can do it for you. We can help you with your accounting, with your tax returns. We can do back taxes, whatever you might need. One thing I want to let you know, though, I'm going to give you a phone number to grab something to write with. You have to understand that the people who answer the phone are not trained tax preparers. In fact, they can't answer tax questions at all, and we can't expect them to. The tax preparers, the people who know all these answers, have to be doing tax returns. They can't be on the phone all day. The people who are on the phones can't possibly be trained in all the questions. Taxes are too complicated to even think about trying that. So just know that the people who answer the phone can explain our tax services and what we can do for you, but they can't answer specific tax questions. If you're interested in using our tax service, we will get you in touch with somebody. We will make sure all your questions get answered. You just have to realize that you're in that profit area where an S corporation would save you money and your accountant hasn't mentioned that to you. Give us a call. We'll go over your numbers and figure out if that makes sense. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Clifford, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. This is really a bad experience, not really a question.
Okay.
Last week, I was coming across 70 towards Columbus, and I was about 5 miles from the TA, and I started getting a low air buzzer, but I looked down at my air gauge, and it's only maybe about 5-10 pounds low. And I was talking to my mechanic on the phone, and he's like, well, what else going on? I said, I don't see anything else going on, and it went off. So I'm like, well, no big deal. Well, it came back on a couple more times. Then come to find out, I seen the trailer brakes were starting to smoke. So I got over off side of the road, four ways on. Go back and look at the trailer. Not one brake smoking, all four of them smoking. So I come back up in the cab, and I noticed that the trailer brake valve is leaking air. On top of that, it's showing about 40 pounds on the dash. And I'm like, I called my mechanic back. I said, what do I do now? And he's like, well, unhook the trailer valve, the blue line on the trailer, and see what it does. So I hooked the blue valve, and I was able to hold pressure with the truck idling, and the brakes released. So I went ahead and went up to the TA, and I got in there. Of course, they didn't have no brake valve, you know, the Chardy valve or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So I called him back, and he said, well, take dash apart, unhook it, plug the lines off. So I did that. So I take off. I get up into Columbus. I'm right downtown, getting close to rush hour. It's about 3:30. I guess I am in rush hour. The trailer brakes are locking up again. And the only thing I knew to do was stop and unhook that valve, unhook that blue line again, and get on out of town.
Okay, so I've got a totally different opinion from what your mechanic was telling.
Okay.
We have systems work on trucks for specific reasons. And, you know, this is kind of, for me, like when people call me and say, I can't believe you like those wide singles. If you get a flat tire, you're stuck on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we have a regulation that says if you have a flat tire, any flat tire, I don't care if you have 87 tires on your truck, if you have a flat tire, it's illegal to drive with it. There's a reason for that. It doesn't matter if you can make it 19 times out of 20 without hurting somebody. It's unsafe. We are dramatically increasing the risk that we're going to hurt somebody when we drive that flat tire down the road. Brakes are the same way. We have an emergency brake system because air brakes are prone to failure, much more prone to failure than the hydraulic type brakes we have on a car. You know, those almost never fail. So we do have somewhat of a backup system. We have an emergency brake. But in an air brake system, you clearly need a backup emergency system that deploys itself when we lose air pressure. And there are several other ways it can work. So in this case, when half of the system fails, The service side on the trailer, something was going wrong, and the brakes started to set, that's the indication that we no longer have a properly functioning brake system. Because the brakes are setting when they should. So we've got a problem. We need to fix the problem. Taking the blue line off is not fixing the problem. It is taking away the redundancy of the system. Now if something goes wrong, we have no backup. Now we have just greatly increased the risk that we're going to hurt somebody or ourselves. Then, so for me, the guy saying, hey, you're 13 miles away from the shop, take the blue line off and drive in, I don't like that answer. I know it's a pain in the ass to sit on the side of the road. I know we have a customer that might be waiting. I know all those things. None of those things would ever be worth a life, right?
Right.
So we can say, yeah, but the odds are I'm going to make it to 13 miles, no big deal. Yeah, but the one time two other things go wrong, somebody pulls out in front of you or whatever, and we kill somebody or we maim somebody, or it would never be worth that little bit of risk we took, or what we thought was a small risk, then it sounds to me like you went one step further. We don't have the part. Let's take the truck apart and put lines back together. I just think these are the kind of steps that ultimately could lead to a tragedy over freight. And to me,
okay,
lives are never worth freight.
Okay, now let me go ahead and finish up this story. Okay, I get to the Freightliner dealer, and I go in and buy the brake valve. And just for the heck of it, I decide to go to the service department and ask them if something else could be wrong so I don't end up not having enough parts to finish the project.
Good idea.
Yeah, so it's a service guy. I tell him the story. And he starts laughing. And I'm like, okay, what's so funny? And he goes, that is so funny. I go, why? He goes, because I did it to a guy one time myself. He goes, I disabled his valve, plugged off the lines, and sent him down the road, and he got to Youngstown and his brakes locked up. And I'm like, unbelievable. I said, why did they lock up? He says, nobody can answer that question either. But to back up and erase all these problems, if I would have known what I was looking for, this is why I called. If I would have known what I was looking for, I would have caught that brake valve 6 months ago. Because the valve was not acting properly for a long time. And why is that? Well, when you apply pressure on the brakes, sometimes it would only go 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 pounds, and it didn't want to put any more in the net. And I thought, I always blamed it on the trailer because I pulled different trailers every day. And it wasn't the trailer's fault. It was that valve's fault. And I just want to get this out there because if somebody's having that problem with their truck, and this is on a Freightliner, if somebody's having that problem with their trailer valve, just get it changed without having to be with that one.
Good. Yeah, and I'm glad we got a good lesson out of this, and that is a good lesson. And it's timely. You know, I've been talking about brakes, and this is why, and again, I'm working with a company to try to, with some training. I mean, we're going to talk about it more. We've got some tools we're looking at that might help people to understand the brake system a little better. So, a great lesson. If anything is acting different, and you don't know what it is. I mean, I don't expect people to be brake technicians, but I expect drivers to realize, hey, something isn't working right. This is the brake system we're talking about. We're not talking about our air conditioner. You know, if your air conditioner starts acting funny and you want to ignore it, go ahead. You know, the only one it's probably going to affect when it quits is you. And you'll be uncomfortable. Big deal. We drove for decades without air conditioning. Brakes are critically important. I can't believe you found two technicians, mechanics, part changers, whatever we should call them, who were both willing to disable your brake system, or yours and somebody else's. Stick around, we'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg.
Hey, Kevin, first time, long time. It's great to talk to you.
Great to have you here.
I had a couple questions. I've got an 04 Columbia with the 14-liter Detroit. I've done all the little tweaks and tunes, OPS, Fast, MicroBlue. I've had the EGR, quote-unquote, tuned by Redneck Diesel down in Hutchins. I've got the tires, and I can't seem to bust 6.7 miles a gallon. Now, I haul flatbed step deck, mostly oversized, and I only go out of town a couple times a month, so it's a lot of local. I'm wondering if 7 or 7.5 is attainable hauling flatbed or oversized.
Yes. It is, and it's not easy. And here's the other to remember when we're talking about open deck of any kind. One of the things that we always have to fight with fuel mileage is the variability that we run into. Meaning, I could show you two different scenarios where a truck could get 6 miles to the gallon on one day and 9 miles to the gallon on another day. I mean, that's a wide spread, but I could show you the conditions under which that would happen. And that would be a van. very often that you would go to those extremes, but it can't, so we have to know it's possible. When we throw in open deck or any type of open trailer, a car hauler is notorious for this, but open deck type freight, now not only do you have all of the other variables, which is terrain, weight, speed, wind, road condition, temperature, all kinds of things that can change fuel mileage, but now you have the fact that every load changes fuel mileage. In a van, the aerodynamics don't change. I mean, the van is the van. It is what it is. I don't care what you put inside it. You're not changing the aerodynamic. You change the weight. But in an open deck operation, we literally are fighting different aerodynamics all the time. So that means it gets harder to track down the different variables and figure out what might be going on. Having said all that, the best way to get good at this is to track it, you know, religiously, watch it all the time, and you know, really pay attention to what's going on. And the longer you do this and the more you track it, the better you get at understanding what's happening. So having said all that, it's certainly possible to get 7+ out of those types of operations. We have to a little harder. We have to know that sometimes we're going to get hit with a load that, you know, really drops our average for a while. Sometimes, and this may or may not sound extreme to some people, sometimes you get better at choosing freight that improves your fuel economy. That's not always possible. You might say, well, you know, I've got this freight that's really profitable, but it's just ugly. Well, then that's fine. I mean, we have to know, is the profit worth it? Most times it is, and then we just work to get the best fuel economy we can. Tell me a little bit about your truck. Specs, tires, all kinds of things.
I've got the Low Pro 22, the Michelin XDA Energies. I got a 10-speed with 279s. It's always seemed a little odd to me, but I spin about 1500 RPM at 65, and then I got the 14-liter Detroit with the modified ECR.
Let's talk about two things right there, because that's the first couple things that jump out for me. When we talk about, you know, some of the fuel mileage numbers, when we talk about guys that are in what they call the 9+ mile per gallon club, or even most people getting over 8. I mean, over 8 is still a pretty amazing accomplishment today. Fleet averages in the U.S. are still running in the low 6s, if that. So to get 8 is pretty amazing. To get 9 puts you up in the top 1%. We have some guys who have broken 10 on 30-day averages, and that puts them in the top 1% of the 1%. But in order to get that 8+ or those really good numbers, if we have car haulers who are getting 6+, which is almost unheard of, almost exclusively, those are done at speeds of 60 miles an hour and less. So now when we were shooting for 7 miles to the gallon, and I'm assuming that, you know, we're going to go 60 miles an hour to get that fuel mileage, 6.5 miles to the gallon, and we have to try to make that up somehow. That's going to be tough.
I was afraid you'd say that.
Yeah, speed is still the absolute number one most critical factor when we talk about this. But you've got another handicap. You have a gear ratio that is absolutely designed to be going 60 miles an hour or less. Now, that's a good thing if you're willing to go that speed. If you're not, you're probably giving up more like 6 or 7 tenths of a mile per gallon to go that extra 5 miles an hour.
Right.
Yes. I always seem to end up back at 65. I do my best to do the 62, 63, but between time constraints and just the fact of drives me nuts going slow, I end up back at 65.
You know, and some people, you know, you've got to make this decision, but I want you to have the information so you're not frustrating yourself. You're going to have a hard time in a aerodynamically unfriendly operation, which we just talked about that. That makes this even worse. You've got a gear ratio that's designed to go slow. So the odds of you breaking 7, 7.5, if you want to go faster than 60, really, really difficult. I mean, we're going to have to spend a lot of money. We're going to have to make sure that EGR is really tuned right. I don't know anything about the company you use. They might be geniuses. Are really helping. I just don't know. But even if they were, the odds of you doing that at 65 miles an hour are really, really slim. The odds of you doing it at 60 or at 57, as crazy as that sounds, go way, way up.
Related to that EGR tune, is it a good idea, bad idea, to, if your ECM has been tuned, can you still put a power box on? Or is there no need for it?
You know, that would be a better question for Pittsburgh Power directly, because they may know more about that tumbling in the ECM. They try to stay on top of that stuff, because a lot of times somebody who's been there, used that other company, comes into their shop and they can look in the ECM and know what's going on. I don't have that ability, and I may or may not understand it if I could see it anyway. But what's happening with the power box is it is taking what's coming out of the ECM and modifying. We're not doing it within the ECM. We're taking the signal after the ECM and then modifying it to the power box settings. So I would call them and ask them what you might be able to expect. But I don't think that that's where I would be spending my money. You go spend $2,700 on a power box or whatever they are. I don't try to keep prices in my head, but it's $2,500 plus, I'm sure. You may not pick up any fuel economy. You may pick up a tenth or two. But if we could figure out a way to get you down to 60, it costs you absolutely nothing. We're going to pick up at least a half mile per gallon.
All right. Well, Kevin, I appreciate everything you do. We enjoy listening to you. I can catch you on satellite and all your podcasts. And I did enjoy Rolling Toe. I haven't got into many of the others, but just didn't realize how in-depth the suspension and alignment and everything, how in-depth that goes.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, thanks for the feedback. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, everybody, before we go to the next segment, I've had some reports that you guys are having a hard time hearing me on the phone. I want to see if I can track that down. I know all my recording levels are really good, so I'm not worried about that. And also, we are heading into the fourth segment. So at the end of this segment, I'm going to say all those things I say at the end of a show. I'm done. I've got to get out of here. But don't hang up, because we'll be coming right back and getting to another hour at least. And if we don't run out of calls, might just do two. All right, so let me see what I can do to maybe increase some volume here. Seeing any reason why you should have a hard time hearing me. Try this. Well, obviously everybody's hearing me enough to talk, so let's go ahead and record. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Ohio. Jason, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Doing wonderful. What can I help you with?
Well, I had a question about LLC. I've got one that I set up at the beginning of this year, and I want to change the name on it, and I don't know what all is entailed to that. Do you know what it takes to change the name on that and keep all your other stuff in place?
I have about a, let me do the math here. I have about a 4 in 50 chance of getting this right. Tell me what state you formed it in.
Oklahoma.
Okay, I struck out. LLCs are state entities. They're also legal entities. You know, I talk a lot about tax, and I can tell you the S-Corp is like this and the LLC is like that. But when we talk about forming the LLC, forming the S-Corp, changing names, selling them, things like that, that's a legal issue, not a tax issue. And I'm not an attorney, and I don't try to play one on the radio.
Okay.
It should be fairly simple to answer, though. A quick Google search about Oklahoma LLC name change or calling the Secretary of State. It's always fun calling government offices. There is a legal service that I found online that you submit the question to them and they tell you for $49 we'll get this answered for you. Or, you know, they give you the price. To it, and I actually used it the other day. I had a weird issue with a vehicle title in another state, and rather than wait until I got down to the title office and figure out that everything was wrong, I went online and started looking for an answer, and I ran across the service. And sure enough, for like $29, they answered my question. Turned out it's a good thing I did it because I needed a totally different form than what the title office was telling me. And I got the right form, got down to the title office, and everything worked great.
Okay. Well, I'll check with them, maybe call the Secretary of State then. And I'm so excited about the CMC this year. I can't wait to get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm here in Kansas City, and I am counting down the dates. I'm always excited, but boy, it's just shaping up to be really amazing. A lot of interesting stuff going. Hey, while we're talking, since somebody mentioned the CMC, I'll throw this out there because we did send out the email, so it is no longer a secret. This is a program we've been working on, the idea for quite some time. Actually, the idea goes back many, many years. Back in 2009, when we were working with the shop in Crossville, Truck City Service, Lisa and I started to develop a program that we were calling a fuel mileage makeover. And we kind of rolled it out pretty quietly. We did a couple of them there at the shop, and we were starting to program, and then, you know, the shop changed, and we kind of had to shelf that program for a while, but we never forgot about it. Sometimes just because we don't move forward with a project doesn't mean that we've given up on the idea completely. And this was one of them. We put it on the shelf for a while, and we have, last year we dusted it off and said, do you think we could pull this off at the CMC? And we've been working on it, and we're going to pull it off. and it is called the Fuel Mileage Makeover. Now, right now, it's only available at the CMC, and right now, it's only available for the first 100 people, and I believe already we're closing in on 50 that have signed up just from the email. Getting into too much, I don't want to go into every single little detail, but what's going to happen is if you're signed up for this program, we are going to do a bumper to mud flap inspection of the truck, a true level one inspection, but also what I call a fuel mileage inspection. I'm going to look at everything on the truck that's going to affect fuel economy. We're going to pull oil samples. This is all part of the price. By the way, just tell you the price up front, it's $150. We're going to pull oil samples so that we can get those off to the lab and I can analyze those and see how that's affecting fuel economy. We're going to smoke test the charge air cooler. Then a team of us will take all of the information. We're talking every single spec on the truck. Gear ratios, tire size, tread depth, tire rolling resistance, you name it, we're going to look at it. A team of us, including myself, will sit down, we'll review each truck, we'll create a plan step by step. There's actually a 5-step process we're going to go through. Create a plan. Then when that plan is done, one member of the team will do a one-on-one session with the owner of the vehicle and go over the plan. We will do a 30-day goal and a 30-day follow-up and a 90-day goal and a 90-day follow-up. That's all part of the program. And you will have, if you're at the CMC, you're going to have early admittance every day, meaning you can get into the room a little early and, you know, sit, have more choices where you want to sit every day. And also on, I think it's Wednesday night, but don't hold me, a special reception with some appetizers and drinks, and just a kind of way for everybody in the program to get together, talk a little bit about the program, and just have another night to network with people who are really interested in fuel economy. There are probably some other details in there I'm forgetting, but for $150, I mean, think about if you rolled into a shop and they just did a level one inspection and smoke tested the charge air cooler. You'd probably be at $150. You would get no advice. You would get no reception, no appetizers, no drinks, no team, no oil samples, no team of people, you know, dissecting your truck and your operation and giving you one-on-one advice. I think that we way underpriced this, and we're going to have to see how it goes this year, but the first 100 people, we'll get that program for $150. We may expand this program later on. We may continue it. We'll see how this goes. But I can almost guarantee you that we won't be able to continue offering that price. Like I say, the value is 3 or 4 times that price easy. Now, if we improve your fuel economy by some of the goals we're going to be looking at is helping you improve your fuel economy 10 to 15% in 90 days based on what we're going to put together. Now, if we did that, $1,000 return, that's value. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Montana. Opie, welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. Thank you. Kevin, if you would mind walking a little bit through this oil sample. The results, of course, came normal. I am just kind of a little concerned when I hear you previously say the calcium is when it's high and silicone is high. I'm not sure if that number 10 and all the other, if you see anything I need to be aware of on this engine for now or not. I run, what, 33,000 on this oil?
Let me take a look, because this is a sample that I'm used to looking at. Thing in the wear metals that would concern me. Silicon, you know, it may be just a touch high, but nothing that I would worry about. Have you put in a new air filter recently?
Only I did before changing this oil up. Before I take an analysis, about 5,000 prior to this. All I did just took the DPF filter down, send it to clean it, put it back. That's the only thing I did on this engine.
Okay. So, do you run, I don't even want to ask if you run in a really dusty environment, because really, the silicon antenna is not a big deal. You know, normally we see them around 5 or 6, but 10, it's not flagged. I wouldn't worry about it. It's not hurting anything, because we would, if we had enough dirt in the engine to hurt anything, that's when we would see the wear metals go up, primarily iron and chromium. And both of those are low, so I'm not worried about those. The additive metals, magnesium, calcium, barium, all of those look just fine. So your viscosity is good. There's no fuel. Soot is low. This is a good oil sample. Nothing I would worry about at all. So just keep doing what you're doing. I am all out of time. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Ross. Everybody, we're just going to jump right into the second hour. Let me take a look at questions real quick. Looks like we've got plenty of questions. Yeah, we do. Okay. So it's possible we might do a third hour today. We'll see, and I'll keep you updated. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. If it has anything at all to do with trucking, we'll tackle it here on the air. Even if it doesn't, ask me anyway. I'll see if I can get you an answer. We're going to get to those questions and answers here in just a little bit. On one of the recent shows, talking with somebody about fuel economy, and specifically in an open deck operation, and he was hoping to get, you know, 7, 7.5, wondering if it was possible. And I said, it's clearly possible. But a lot of things have to happen right. And when we started talking about the equipment, we started realizing there were some challenges, mostly in aerodynamics, but also in some gearing issues. And everything pointed to the fact that we could get 7.5, but you'd have to run 60 miles an hour or less. And there's virtually nothing we can do to make up that difference. Now, any time, if we were able to get to, say, 7.5, 7 miles an hour, a lot of guys who are chasing fuel economy, they understand that the slower you go, the better the fuel economy will be. That is just physics. There's no way around it. And there isn't even really much of a bottom on that number. In fact, it's not a practical bottom. I have seen testing where they tested trucks all the way down to 38 miles an hour to show that the fuel economy just keeps getting better and better. And again, it's just physics. I mean, nobody should be surprised by that. We can't change physics. The laws of physics have been pretty much the same for a long, long time. That was kind of a joke. So we just have to understand that. If you want to drive faster, my God, you should. I mean, that's totally up to you. That's why you own the truck and run the business. You get to make the decision. But just understand what you're facing. rough number is for every 1 mile per hour of speed change in either direction, you will see a 1/10 of a mile per gallon change in fuel economy in either direction. If you go 1 mile per hour faster, you're going to lose 1/10 of a mile per gallon. If you go 1 mile per hour slower, you're going to gain 1/10 of a mile per gallon. So when we talk about these really high mile per gallon trucks, keep in mind, when I talk about fuel economy, I'm not talking about the callers. Callers can say anything they want. I'm just on the other end of a phone line here. I can't verify what they're telling. But when I talk about fuel economy, I am not talking about a one-time number. I'm not talking about something we got off the dash. I'm not talking about something we got off a fuel tax report. I'm not even talking about something we get off the scan gauge KR. It's not designed to track accurate fuel economy. It's designed to help you learn how to drive better. I am talking about a calculated fuel mileage number using gallons and miles, hopefully accurate gallons and accurate miles, at least a 30-day average. Not one tank, not two tanks, not a week, 30 days of miles and gallons. Do the math. What is the average? That's what we're talking about. And since I'm throwing that word average out there, let's be clear. If I ask somebody for what is your average fuel economy, I'm looking for just one number. So if I ask for average fuel economy, the answer I'd like to hear is something like 7.2 or 6.38 or 8.4. We'll respond, well, it's, 5.7 to 6.4. That's not an average. That's a range. A range can be important, and I might ask for a range. When I ask for an average, we're really talking about one number. Many times when people tell me, well, it's between, what that normally means is they don't know their average because they don't have a system of tracking the average. In our fuel gauges system, which if you haven't checked it out, you really need to go check it out. It's free. There's a phone app, which is also free. It will calculate your 30-day average, your 60-day average, your 90-day average, your lifetime average. It will show you your range during any of those periods, the highest fuel mileage you obtained during that time, the lowest fuel mileage you attained, and the average. It will show you your cost per mile for fuel, which I should, you know, we should talk more about cost per mile as well, because the whole point in getting better fuel economy is not to just get better fuel economy. It's to lower your cost of operation so we put more money back in your pocket. I don't just want high MPG numbers. I want low fuel cost numbers. That's our ultimate goal. So we should talk more about that number because that includes two differences, you in getting better fuel economy, but also learning how to shop for fuel better by, you know, knowing which state to buy in, paying attention and doing a little work, knowing which truck stop to buy at, getting a fuel discount, you know, through different means. So all of those things combined will help with the overall fuel cost, which is really our goal. So just know that when it comes to fuel cost, fuel mileage, you've got to track it. You've got to track it accurately. And speed still trumps everything else. 40 ways to improve fuel economy on a tractor, 70 plus ways to improve it on a tractor, trailer, driver combination. Lots and lots of variables, lots of opportunities, lots of possibilities. You've got to track it. Fuel is number one. You've got to make sure your equipment is maintained properly. Those are all things that will have a huge impact on how much you're paying for fuel. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to Wisconsin. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Fair tax, no.
I agree. I agree. Even though We made this huge investment in accounting, you know, building accounting software. We made a huge investment in developing a partnership and creating a tax service. Give it all up so we could have a fair tax.
Absolutely. Questions for you, Kevin. I just put on an OPS, the EcoPeer. I'm running mineral oil right now with $1,219,222 on the truck. Do I dare switch to synthetic?
What is your oil consumption like? How often do you have to put in a gallon?
Right. Well, before I put the system on, I was changing it every 15,000, and I'd use 1 gallon of oil between changes.
That is so impressive. See, that to me means much more than anything else. That number is kind of insignificant. I know trucks with 300,000 miles that would use 3 gallons in that time. And in that case, I would say, yeah, you might only have 300,000 miles, but I wouldn't switch to synthetic. In your case, 1.2 million, you don't have any oil consumption to speak of. So, yeah, I would make the switch.
Okay. The other question I have is, I put the FAST system on also. I've got a Volvo with a twin feed, the twin returns, and also the twin vents on it. The vents for the returns are go on top of the returns on their system. I have fuel blowing out my return, or blowing out my vent system. So I changed that up and just, you know, turned it so they don't align right. Now I have one tank that's dang near full and the other one's just about empty. It won't return evenly. And it did so before I put the FAST system on it.
Oh, it did. Okay. And here's the thing, and I've said this before. It's not, you know, it's not rocket surgery to put a FAST on, but it does seem to be one of the products that we have more installation issues. But the FAST probably has nothing whatsoever to do with this because it was doing it before we even had it on. So I hear the music. Let me get to a break, and I'll come back, and we can talk about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
It was not, that was not doing it prior to me putting the FAST system on it.
Oh, it was not doing it. I thought you said it was. Okay.
Before I put the FAST system on it, my tanks were even.
Got it. The way they should be. So, got it. Now I understand. So now I'll go back to my installation explanation. And this is kind of an aside, but it helps people to understand, you know, some of the things we have to deal with. I have learned a tremendous amount of information about dealer networks, distribution networks, the challenge of bringing a product to any market. And one of the challenges in this industry is that it's almost impossible to work in a local market. The market is dealers or service points that if a guy buys a product in one state, he's going to be able to get it fixed in another. And it is a challenge. You just have to work really hard at it, and we work with a lot of companies that face that challenge. FAST has done an amazing job of getting their product all over the country. They've also faced a lot of challenges in making sure that all of those shops are installing and servicing it properly. And again, it's not, you know, brain science, but there's some challenges. And we see this quite often. Now, I'm not even going to attempt to troubleshoot it on the air because I've seen way too many different configurations, too many reasons. It is an installation issue. I've seen something as simple as, you know, they get an install kit, but yet the mechanic grabs a fitting out of their bin because he's used to using that fitting, and it fits, but it has a different inside diameter. And something that simple. Now, it was a very simple mistake, but imagine trying to figure that out after the fact. You know, you look at the system, you go, oh no, everything looks like it's installed just fine. You don't know that that inside diameter on one of the fittings they used was different. You assume they used the stuff you supplied. I don't problem here. I'm just pointing out some of the things I've seen. Have you talked to Fast directly yet?
No, I haven't.
I would call them. They have a great technical department. Everybody you talk to on the phone has turned wrenches and installed these things. They're not just reading from a script. These guys understand the installation, how it's supposed to go. When it goes wrong, they know where to look. I would probably have you running around chasing stuff that might not be nearly as efficient as what they'll have.
Okay. One other quick question. My last oil sample, and I'm doing them kind of at one of these bench shops, but I've consistently done it with that bench, that off market. You know, it's not an OPS, it's not Fabco or anything like that. This last oil sample came back normal as the rest of them, except the viscosity dropped tremendous.
Okay, so here's my issue, and this is why I just can't endorse or even recommend or use any results from the benchtop unit, because we've tested them enough against other oil samples that we know we get false readings all the time. Now, we also get good readings. But if you get enough false readings, how do you ever know? So, you know, I don't want somebody to say, oh, well, that was probably just a false reading, let's ignore it. On the other hand, I don't want to send you down to have somebody tear into your injectors and then find out this was a false reading. So, to me, the benchtop is just worthless. I mean, don't even do it, because when I hear the results, the only thing I'm going to tell you to do is go do a real oil sample, because that's the best next step. Now, here's what I'm afraid of, though, so I do want you to do a real oil sample pretty quickly. It's very common with today's fuel blends that even there are lots of old service labs that can't detect fuel dilution properly anymore. OPS Labs Polaris, they have spent a tremendous amount of money to upgrade their testing on fuel dilution. In fact, theirs is so sensitive now, we have to read it a little differently from what we used to. But the other indication that there is fuel dilution and they just missed it is viscosity drops. I mean, that's classic. You get fuel in the oil, it gets thinner. That's viscosity. So they may have gotten that right. They may have gotten the viscosity right, and these benchtop, they just can't pick up fuel dilution. We see it all the time. They don't have the ability to do that. Give me some numbers. Are you running, you said this was a mineral oil, so your viscosity should have been in the mid-14 range before, was it?
Yes.
And what is it now?
It dropped to 13, low 13s.
Okay.
Which they just yellow flagged it. They said to monitor it.
Yeah. I'm not too worried about that. If you would have said 11, I would have been saying drain a gallon of oil, dump a gallon of Lucas in it, and, you know, real oil sample quickly. Dropping to 13, I'm going to say, if you need to top off oil anytime soon, top it off with Lucas and get an oil sample done relatively soon.
Okay.
But I've only got like 4,500 miles on this oil, and I thought right around 5,000, I'm going to take a sample and send it in.
That'd be good. Yep, that would be good. If it goes to Polaris, you know, and you want to call back, we'll have access to the sample, and I can look at, you know, exactly what's going on. Let's go to Colorado. Rob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I have a question about, I'm going to do a, you know, a 6.2 conversion, put a lift axle in, and when I do it, I want to re-gear my truck. I'm currently running Low Pro 24.5s behind an 18-speed with a 6NV, and, you know, when I'm running at 61 miles an hour, the computer says I'm at 1310 RPMs, and I'd like to know if I convert to wide-base tires or super singles, what gear ratio should I put in so that I can run in direct gear and maintain that 61 at about 1300 RPMs?
You're right smack in between 264 and 279. I'm going to recommend, since you've got an 18 speed, I would go with the 279s.
Go ahead.
I'm up slightly above that 1300, not enough, though, that it's going to affect fuel economy at all. It might bring you up to, say, 1350, but you won't see any negative fuel economy consequences. And then you still have two more gears to drop RPM and go faster.
Okay. So you said 264s?
No, 279.
Well, I'm sorry. You're recommending the 279s.
Yeah. Yeah, see, if you went with 64, you would actually end up at about 1280 at 61. And I don't want to go in that direction because you still have two more gears up there. I would prefer to bring your RPMs up a little bit at 61. Not enough to change fuel economy at all. You'll get a little better throttle response. Not a major difference in either direction. I just think that's it's going to be more drivable and make your other two gears more drivable.
Okay. Hey, good to know. I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We are coming up to the break, so I'm going to take us into the break, and when we get back, we will get to more of your questions, so stick around. The website is letstruck.com. I've been talking lately about our tax service. We launched it late last year. We only opened it up to a small group of people just so we could work out the systems, make sure our customer service was the way we wanted it, get through one tax season, which we've done. The 2014 tax return season is over, other than extensions. We had a great season, great feedback from our customers. Systems all worked really well, and now we are ready to open it up. So if you haven't relationship for 2015, give us a call. I'm going to give you the number, grab something to write with. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right to Spokane. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going great. What can I help you with today?
I got a buddy that's got a new Freightliner. He's got about 70,000 miles on it. He's got the Goodyear G399 fuel efficient steer tires. He's real good about monitoring his air pressure and stuff like that. But the second rib from the outside on his left steer tire is starting to cup. Could his shocks already be bad on that new truck?
Yes, they could. 70,000 when they roll off the lot.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah, they're just horrible shocks. But I don't think that's the case here. One of the things I will say, I don't normally see really bad tire wear issues, and I consider this a bad tire wear issue. I don't see normally bad tire wear issues attributed to weak shocks. They certainly have an effect. They can compound a problem that's already there, but very seldom do I ever find a truck that's wearing tires funny, and you put a new set of shocks on and the wear goes away. I mean, that just doesn't seem to happen very often. So I don't normally look at shocks. What would be much more likely in this case is that I might get these numbers wrong. You know, I've heard Mike Beckett say this so many times, but I don't remember exactly. But when you go to the factory and, you know, the truck coming down the assembly line and it's all done and built, then it goes to the station where they do the alignment on the truck. I think they get like 7 minutes to align the truck.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's some crazy number. And they have this wide range of specs that they're allowed to be within. So that's where the first problem starts. The second problem that compounds it is the fact that the minute you start driving that truck, things start shifting and settling in and creating that initial wear pattern. So really, every 1,000 miles or so should probably get a real good alignment done. And when I say real good, in my book, that is an MD system, an MD alignment system, not some of those other places that we know all the reasons why they might have good intentions, but they'll still get it wrong. So I would think this is an alignment issue. Now, one of the other things we found, and I have to be careful when I say this, the low rolling resistance steer tires seem to have a tendency that if something is wrong with the alignment, they tend to magnify the problem, and it happens in that second rib for some reason. But again, later in life, like 150, 200,000 miles, times we will start to see that river wear in the second rib. And that's just, you know, it's just that tire is getting towards the end of its life. But that's not the case here. I am pretty sure you're going to find an alignment issue with this truck.
Okay, so he needs to go see Chad.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'll tell him, man. Oh, I got an email last night, and we got signed up for the fuel mileage makeover. So we're going to be right in the middle of it.
That is fantastic. We are going to, me and the team are going to converge on your truck.
That's fine with me. Hey, that's the kind of people I want looking at my truck. And when I saw the price, I laughed and I said, yeah, we got to do this because there's no way we could get all this done for that kind of money. So I really appreciate you offering that to us, and we're going to take advantage of it.
And us in letting us do it. And the reason we priced it so low this time was, you know, in some ways, we put a lot of work into it. We've thought through it all. We've worked out the systems. We've got all the forms. You know, we've kind of practiced this. But you guys are the guinea pigs. I did four or five trucks back in 2009, I think we did it. We saw some problems we had to fix, and we did. But you guys are still kind of the guinea pigs. It's the first time. It's kind of a high-pressure week anyway. And, you know, if we screw up a little bit, which we might, we hope that you'll be a little forgiving because we did it at such a great price.
Well, the thing is, we know we have an advantage over a lot of people because we've met the people that are going to be doing this. That's right. Why we have confidence. And we're not going into it blind. We've got confidence because we've met these guys and we know how sharp they are. So we forward to seeing you guys in a week or so, and we'll be trying to get back that direction.
Can't wait. We will see you soon. We wanted to price it so that, one, there was just a tremendous amount of value, and two, even if there was something we missed, I don't think we have, but even if there was something we missed and things don't go as smoothly as we hope, there will still be a tremendous amount of value. Now, once we work out the bugs, there's really no way we could continue to offer that price. I mean, we are building a lot of work into this and a tremendous amount of value. So the first 100 people that get that fuel mileage makeover, you are getting a real value. So can't wait, some new goals for you. Let's go to South Carolina. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. What can we help you with?
Okay. In past shows, listening to you and some others, I guess, some conversations come up about fuel pricing and where it's I guess gives us discounts when the prices go down versus when they go up because of our fuel mileage and what it costs for us to haul the load or whatever. And I really don't understand that part and wanted to see if you could kind of help me out with it a little bit.
You know, I think what we might be talking about, and it really doesn't have anything at all to do with fuel mileage or loads or anything else. What we have discussed in the past, there are two major ways that fuel discount programs work. The one that more people are familiar with is just a cent off discount. So an example of that would be your fuel card or your fuel network offers 4 cents off at all the pilots and 6 cents off at all the flying J's or whatever it is. And that way you know, I just look at the sign. The sign says it's this. I get it for 6 cents less. That's a pretty straightforward discount. Easy to understand. The other one is what is called a cost plus discount. And it's very different. That one says for the truck stop paid for the fuel plus so much is what you will pay for the fuel. Well, we don't know what the truck stop paid. The system does, but it's referred to as a cost plus discount. So it's a little more complicated to understand, and it can have some real advantages, but they can tend to work in opposite ways when, if fuel prices are steady and consistent, they're both about the same. One might be a bigger discount than the other, but, you know, it's still pretty straightforward. But if you think about this, the retailer, the truck stop, in a cents off discount, they buy a whole bunch of fuel all at one time. And then fuel prices go down at the wholesale level. Well, they will be able to keep their pump price up for a while because we don't know that the wholesale prices went down. And as long as all the truck stops keep their price up for a couple of days or a week or whatever, then we're not gaining the advantage. So do you see what's happening there with the cents off discount?
Right.
But on the other hand, the cost plus is different. When they buy the fuel, that's when the price gets set. So depending on which direction prices are moving, one of the programs might have an advantage over the other one. This is one of those things that every time I try to say it on the air, I have a hard time making it understandable. It's one of those things that when I can show you the numbers and say, okay, they bought their fuel on this day, fuel prices started to go this way, your discount worked better. On the other hand, if they bought the fuel here and you have a cent off and fuel prices go this way, it's hard for me to throw out all the numbers and have it make sense. But let me get to a break, and I'll come back and see if that's what you were asking about at all, and see if I can make it any clearer. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Okay, so a real quick heads up. Let me check something here. We're heading into the fourth segment. I'm trying to figure out if we're going to record another hour or not. You know what? I'm not going to be able to record another hour today. While I was talking, I got a message from Sirius. Got a meeting with them, a conference call. And I won't be able to finish up another hour in time. So, I just won't be able to do it. So we're going to have to wrap this up. This will be the last segment today. Tomorrow we're going to shoot for 3 hours again, though, and maybe even Friday. I was hoping to be able to do it today, but I just found out about that conference call. So we're going to wrap it up with this segment. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with John in South Carolina. So, John, did that help at all, or did I just confuse you more?
No, that was what I was talking about, and you didn't confuse me. I guess right now I'm on the cent discount, and I'm trying to monitor my fuel cost pretty good, and I'm down to about 43 cents a mile for fuel, give or take, maybe 45. I was wondering if what you were talking about was going to make mine to where my actual numbers aren't my actual numbers. I kind of been focusing on that number to give me a better bottom line towards the end of this coming year. So I just wanted to make sure I was on the same sheet of music and I was actually getting the right numbers out of what I was getting.
Yeah, you are. And I looked at your numbers in fuel gauges, and your numbers are looking good, and you're on the right track. Yeah, the cent per mile discount, you don't have to think too much about it because there's not much you can do. The numbers are the numbers. You get a discount. You know, the retailer will decide when they drop their pump price, whereas in a cost plus, the system has more to say about what price is going to be figured for the discount, and sometimes we see cost plus discounts that just get huge. I mean, if people end up getting like, you know, 40 or 50 cents off the pump price sometimes because of the way the prices are moving, but even then, I mean, it kind of is what it is.
When the fuel prices dropped real good earlier in the past year, 2014, we were down to like 40 cent discount that we were getting. We were just at a 30 cent discount 2 weeks ago, and it just went down to a 14 cent discount. So that's, you know, when it fluctuates like that, that's why I was kind of wondering, you know, if my numbers were right or not, or if I'm on the right track.
Yeah. Yep, you are. And Matt just sent me over a real-world example that kind of helps. PA today in Bloomington, Illinois, cash price is $2.71 a gallon. Matt has a NASDIQ fuel card, so he looked up the cost plus today is $2.57. That is a significant discount. That's nice. Let's put that off to Pennsylvania. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I'd like to talk today about Truck Systems Technology, who
for people that don't know, they do tire pressure monitors, one of your partner companies. And I'd like to talk about my experience that I've had with them and how positive it has been.
Okay.
I started out, my particular application, I have duals, so I got the 10, you know, the 10 monitors and everything. And I noticed that I had an extreme fluctuation in tire pressures between my inner and outer duals. You know, airflow, things of that nature. And they recommended with one of their particular partner companies, Cat Eyes. And I went to that product, worked with them back and forth. And they have a gentleman over there by the name of Mike that does a lot of their day-to-day operations. I've spoke with him multiple times after hours. 8 o'clock at night, I've actually called in on a Saturday afternoon and got them. Their customer service is wonderful. They do charge a premium for their product, no question about it. But you get what you pay for with their product. I could not be happier. And they've actually asked me to write a review of their product and of my customer service experience that I've had with them, and I am more than happy to do that for them. And I want to say thank you to the Let's Truck team for actually partnering with such a quality company. That your recommendations of partner companies is really top-notch. And anybody that questions should they or should they not work with a company, if you endorse it, it's worth it, plain and simple.
You know, one of the things we fight with, and this is human nature, this, and I try not to, we are much quicker to talk about bad experiences than we are good. You know, something bad happens, a company does something we don't like, boy, we just run around and tell everybody. Something good happens, and I get it. We expect good, and we should. I mean, we're paying good money for something, so something good happens, and we say, well, that's the way it should be. So when somebody takes the time to say, hey, I really appreciate what this company did. They went above and beyond. Yes, I pay more for the product, but look at what I'm getting because of it. I appreciate that kind of feedback. That really helps us do our job better.
Like I said, it's the I've had to do a couple returns. The first product didn't work just the way I needed it to. Without questions, it was, here's the product, here's what it is. Anybody that, you know, is looking for a tire pressure monitor system, without question, don't look at anybody else. The TST is where you need to be.
Standing. I love that. I love the feedback. And you know, for the regular listeners, they know what we went through on tire pressure monitoring systems. I think it was almost 4 years of back and forth. And it wasn't that the products I tested were horrible. They really weren't. It was just that each one just kind of fell a little short of what we really wanted. Sometimes it was the product, sometimes it was the company, sometimes it was the customer service. But each time I tested a system, we were really close to creating a partnership. And we would back off and say, yeah, let's do one more. I'm just not feeling quite right. Let's do one more. And I think we probably could have been relatively happy with the other systems, but we just kept trying. And finally, after looking at many systems, testing for, like I say, about 4 years, PST stood out above everybody else. And, you know, we're always a little nervous with a new partnership of any kind because we have worked so hard to build our reputation, to build our credibility, to say, hey, these are the companies, here's why we work with them, and you can trust them. We're always a little nervous that change, management changes, but I have to say, we have just been very, very pleased with all of our partner companies. So. And again, it's your feedback that helps us do that, so I appreciate that. Thank you. Let's go to Missouri. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today? I just
just wanted to find out about the what kinds in there. What type?
Quick. I'm not sure if you're real far away from your phone or if you're on a speaker phone, but I'm having a real hard time hearing.
Can you hear me now? Is that any better?
Oh, that is much better. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry about that. I was trying to find out what stage in the year would I need to consider getting an S-car, or can you do it at the end of the year, or how does that work?
Yeah, the S-Corp. You're going to hear lots and lots of different things as far as why you should be an S-Corp. But what it really comes down to is what you hear me talk about, and that is we only do it for tax reasons. Or you will hear all kinds of things about being able to get corporate credit, you know, get a credit card in the corporate name, you'll never be responsible. Forget all that stuff. That stuff is untrue. It doesn't work in the real world. You will hear that S corporations protect your assets. That's not true either. Doesn't work. So we do it for reasons alone, and we have some numbers that we go by. And the reason we use those numbers is because we've worked out all the calculations. In order for the S-Corp to save you money overall, you've got to be able to save a certain amount in tax, which means we have to have a certain amount of profit to work with. Because you're going to increase your cost when you go to an S-Corp. Your accounting cost will go up, your tax return cost will go up, you're going to pay for payroll, you're going to pay filing fees. So we need to save enough in tax to overcome those additional costs and then still save money on top of it. There isn't any number that's ever perfect because everybody's tax we use, though, will get you very close. If you are paying tax on more than $65,000, that means the bottom line on the Schedule C. If it's more than $65,000, there is a good chance that an S-Corp is going to make sense for you and save you at least a couple thousand in tax. If you're at that $60,000-$65,000 number, it pays to get it reviewed by somebody who understands this. And we do. You could always have it reviewed by us. You could have it reviewed by your tax preparer. But if you want to know from us, you could give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL. And I'm all out of time, so I've got to go. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.